Welcome back to the podcast, episode 82. I'm your host, Hoop.
And I'm your host, Saini. And we welcome you back to another episode of Deep Dive. Deep Dive is a series that me and Hoop created where we go over a specific NBA player and talk about the ups and the downs of their careers. We talk about every crucial moment that led to their career being where it is today. And for today's episode, we're going to go over Paul George. Hoop, why don't you get us started?
That was flawless. I got to say this to the audience because obviously that sounds like a pre-recorded intro where like you're reading off a script. There's no script. That's just what his voice sounds like. That was clean,
hey,
bro.
Hey, I'm a freestyler, bro.
That was clean.
I appreciate it.
We're going over Paul George, someone who has had superstar comparisons ever since he was 22, 23 and kind of turned into this second option, if you will, a 1A, 1B, someone who's fought a lot of injuries, someone who hasn't won yet, and raises a lot of questions to the caliber of player he was, but we want to set all those records straight to actually show you guys what happened. Irrelevant, but I'm really hoping the Knicks get Paul George. I saw a rumor.
Looks like the Clippers want to break them up. I saw that rumor as well, so it'll be interesting to see if... you know, by the time I release this episode, a few weeks after Paul George lands somewhere else and kind of starts that new chapter. But for any of the listeners out there, just to give you some context, we're recording this on June 23rd, 2023. So Paul George is still a Clipper. We don't know if he's going to change teams. Obviously, there's been some rumors, but take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say, not that they need any more promo, because I'm sure they got plenty, but Paul George has a great podcast. If you want to go listen to that one, Podcast P, very well run. And, you know, maybe we could catch up to them one day, possibly.
But maybe we can have a certain host of that show on this show. So, you never know.
You never know. So starting off with the earliest beginnings of his career, I guess it's my duty to go over the draft. Drafted in 2010. This was John Wall going number one. PG was picked 10. There was a lot of guys who were worse that got picked in front of him. PG was out of Fresno State, so not like a huge school. John Wall was one to Washington. Philly took Evan Turner. The Nets took Derek Favors. The Wolves took Wesley Johnson. Then Sacramento took Boogie. The Warriors took Ekpe Udo. Detroit took Greg Monroe. The Clippers took Al-Farouq Aminu. Utah, Gordon Hayward. And then Indiana, Paul George. So a lot of small forwards even going before PG.
It's a forward-heavy draft.
And, I mean, I'm not going to go over the comparison like I did last EP with the point guards. But I do have PG's draft comp pulled up from 2010. Believe it or not, it's Danny Granger, the guy he played with, which I thought was really funny.
That is actually, and for Danny Granger to be his mentor, I mean, hey, that's perfect situation, I guess, for him
at
the time.
They also put Joe Johnson, which, you know, in terms of, I think PG had more athleticism, but their games are both smooth, so great job
in terms of shot rate. I don't think we saw Paul George defensively becoming what he is today, but offensively those are actually not bad comparisons.
They're very good.
I
don't want to get into like, oh, why did these people draft Al-Farouq Aminu over, or like what would this look
we're here to talk about PG's career. And more specifically, when we're talking about the Indiana years, the first thing we want to bring up, and the most important, I believe, from his early years is obviously his rise to stardom. Now, for those of you new fans, you know Paul George as a small forward. But fun fact, he actually came into the league as a shooting guard his first two seasons. This was obviously so that he was able to play beside Danny Granger, as Danny Granger was the starting small forward at the time. And if you don't know about Danny Granger, go educate yourself. Danny Granger was the Pacers' main focus at the time, as he was a young forward who would consistently put up 20-plus points per game in his years with the Pacers before the injury. We're going to talk about the injury in a sec. And through PG's first two seasons, this is where Danny Granger was healthy and beside him. He had a usage rate his rookie year of 17.8% and 19.4% his sophomore year. Now, those numbers are important to keep in mind because... And for those of you who don't know what usage rate is, sorry, it is essentially an estimate of percentage of team plays used by a player while that player was on the floor. Now, then comes the 2012-2013 season, and this is when the rise to stardom starts. Danny Granger has knee issues, and only plays 5 games that season. Now, unfortunately for Danny Granger, this also was the downfall of his career. He was never the same after this. Danny Granger never had even a subpar season, I believe. It was a terrible way to end the career. But this was the emergence of PG superstardom in Indiana. Now, superstar is not a word that I like to throw lightly, but you'll see why we're calling it superstardom. Anyway, after Granger goes down, Paul George moves into a more comfortable role as the starting small forward. He's no longer a shooting guard, and this led to him getting his first All-Star nod, and he also earned Most Improved Player that season. Now, PG's usage rate this season goes up to 23.5%, and he played just over 1,000 minutes compared to the minutes he played in his sophomore season. Following this breakout year, the reason the term superstar kind of became associated with Paul George's name, a major reason to that was due to the playoff run he had with Indiana. Now, the infamous Indiana-Miami series. Now, if you watch that series live, you know how hype those series really were. I mean, that Miami Big Three, in my opinion, the strongest opponent they had in the East was that Indiana team. Paul George, in his first year as a number one option, took a prime LeBron James and that Heat Big Three to 7 games. His first season as a number one option in the Indiana, right? Which is very, very impressive. We don't talk about that series enough when we bring up Paul George. This, of course, was the cherry on top for Paul George to receive a 5-year max contract extension from Indiana the following offseason. That one season alone led Indiana to obviously offer him a 5-year extension. Now, just to bring up some examples, now I'm not comparing these two players at all, but this isn't the case of, let's say, a Jordan Poole who has one really good season and then you just throw money at him and then it ends up being a bad deal, right? Because Jordan Poole signs that $140 million extension or whatever after that 1 year with the Warriors breakout. And now it's looking like it's not worth it. I mean, they just dumped off his salary because obviously it didn't work out, right? That was not the narrative in the media around Paul George signing that extension. Following this extension, there was no buzz in the media that this was a bad move. And in fact, different articles at the time show that the assumption was that PG was on track to at one point be the best player in the league at the end of this extension. To give an example, I'm going to quote certain parts of an article written by Poch de la Rosa, apologies if I pronounce your name wrong, on November 15th, 2013.
I'm going to quote Reddit after you.
Quote Reddit. I'm quoting Bleacher Report. I'm quoting Bleacher Report here, November 15th, 2013, where it is stated, quote unquote, "Truly, PG and NBA superstar belong in the same sentence, and it wouldn't be too far-fetched to see Paul George, MVP, and NBA champion belonging in the same sentence." To put some more perspective on how the media viewed Paul George at the time, let's take a look at the 2014 All-Star voting numbers to show you how the media perceived Paul George and where he ranked in the NBA. Both East and West included, this was the rankings of the All-Star voting. LeBron James at number one with just over 1.4 million votes, 1.416 million to be exact. At number two, Kevin Durant with just under 1.4 million votes, 1.396 million to be exact. And at number three, Paul George with just over 1.2 million votes, 1.211 million to be exact. Paul George that season had more All-Star votes. The season after his Most Improved year, he had more All-Star votes than Kyrie, D. Wade, Carmelo Anthony, Steph Curry, who also had a breakout season in 2014, if you remember correctly, Blake Griffin, Kobe Bryant, and Chris Paul. The media saw Paul George as the next big thing. Now, something funny I would like to bring up, as it is etched in my memory for some random reason, is that on 2K14 Next Gen, so the PS4 version, I remember I used to spam my GM. And I used to do this thing where you do like a fantasy draft and you simulate it, because I would love to just build random teams, right? And it would do this fantasy draft where, like, it was just like, you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like you play fantasy.
I do that all the time.
You draft the team.
Yeah.
Like, you're drafting teams, right? The order would always, always go. And you could go get any copy of 2K14 without the updates, because I don't know what it's like now. And you do a draft. It goes Kevin Durant, drafted first, LeBron James, and then Paul George. So even video games like 2K had this guy being only behind LeBron and Kevin Durant. They saw Paul George as the youngster with the most potential out of anyone like Harden, Steph, Russ, Kyrie, Blake, John Wall. I could name young stars all day. But the point is, PG was the youngster with the highest upside. At the age of 23, Paul George had the NBA in the palm of his hands. What happened? Now, I don't mean to say that in a way that he didn't live up to this expectation and, you know, he's a flop, he's a bust. Of course, Paul George had a great career. But for those of you who are new to basketball, there was a point where we saw Paul George as the next big name, as the next, he was who the media pushed to be the next guy. He was the dog of the NBA. That was Reddit, the superstar.
Real quick.
Quote Reddit for me, please.
Before you get into what happened, this is from 10 years ago. It says, what is Paul George's ceiling, really? This dude says on Reddit, a friend of mine believes he has the potential to be better than Kevin Durant one day and will be an MVP caliber player in the future. Right? So they say that. They also say his teammate, dude in the comments says, Roy Hibbert will be better than Paul George. I just want to show how the Pacers were perceived at that time, because I'm going to get into it in a later topic.
You might take that as a joke, but Roy Hibbert was that guy defensively too.
Like, he was tough.
That Pacers team was tough.
I'm saying the reason people are saying this, and the reason I feel like they're being talked so much about, is because people tune in when the playoffs are going on and dudes are playing maybe 20 games when that's the featured game on TV. People aren't tuned into indie games beforehand. So they see this dude on the TV screen playing against LeBron seven times, and he's doing really well six or seven times. It's
he's
like,
on
yeah, this dude is tough.
Every night. He
played 19 games that first postseason, and I believe 18 the second.
Yeah, that's,
like, that's
insane.
That's a lot of time on TV.
And that's the Miami team in front of him. Like, that's because Miami's still in front of him. Like, it's a different conversation. Let's say for some odd reason Miami doesn't make it that far. We could be having a different conversation right now. Like, I just want to let y'all know that the only reason PG didn't make it with the Pacers is due to that big three in Miami. And that was, like, peak LeBron James. That 2013 LeBron, that's one of the best versions. The only thing that compares to that version is 2018 LeBron James. 2013 LeBron was that guy. And people are forgetting that. And Paul George took him to seven games. But anyway, again, at age 23, Paul George, he's seen as the next big thing. What happened? Two words. Broken leg. Okay, during the 2014 offseason, Paul George committed to playing with Team USA. This led to the infamous Paul George leg break that left him out for most of the following season. He came back near the end, making his return on April 5th, 2015. I didn't research that day, by the way. The reason I know that date, and it's in my heart, truly, is because he came back on my birthday. And I remember as a kid seeing the reports that Paul George was coming back to play the Miami Heat on April 5th, 2015. And I was like, that's the best birthday gift I could ever get, because I was a big Paul George fan back then, which is, you know, destiny has it that he goes on Oklahoma. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, he comes back on April 5th, but he only played six games that season, and he averaged 8.8 points per game in that stretch. He didn't start one game, of course. They're trying to, like, ease him back in. Although PG did come back the following season, though, in 2015-2016 season, sorry, playing a high level of basketball. It's obvious that the media moved on to other young stars who shined in the year that Paul George was out, putting up more attention on guys like Steph, Harden, and Russ to carry the load for the next generation of superstars. And this is obviously going to segue into Hoop. I know, Hoop, you have a lot of stuff to talk about, PG-24 versus PG-13. But that was essentially the rise of stardom to Paul George in his early years, and how the media perceived Paul George and how he was actually on this pedestal that he was the best young guy to look out for.
It's crazy that you bring that up, because I'm a forgetful person, so you're talking about, you know, 2K14, which I know I played, but now that you say it's like, yeah, he was like the next guy. Even when he came back after injury, I understand that Steph and other guys have taken the limelight. They were still pushing him to be something maybe bigger than what he became, which I don't want to sound disrespectful, because
he had a great
career.
Yeah,
he had an amazing
career.
But like, he was on the cover of 2K17, which would never load. He was the face of Gatorade Flow, which I still vividly remember that commercial coming out and like quoting it constantly with my brother when it was
game.
Like, ball game. Real
no,
smooth.
But it sucks that the 2014-2015 season he missed, because that was the year that Harden, Westbrook, and Steph were in the MVP race, that was when the youngsters really showed out, and that was when it was like, okay, there's a new generation to look for, and Paul George, what I think, in my opinion, would have been at the head of that pack if he doesn't get injured.
It's interesting because he's in Indiana, and you'll see what I have to say about the teams after he got injured. Obviously, I said something about Roy Hibbert. They had, on those earlier teams, George Hill, Lance Stevenson, David West, who wasn't an all-star anymore, but he was still very solid. A couple nice bench pieces, which were competent in going deeper into the playoffs. He needed more help to beat LeBron. But he was not very far off. Paul George was a spectacular player. Afterwards, however, the roster is dimmed down. I don't know if Indiana would have been able to keep him happy. If he played 2015, maybe he wants to leave a year earlier if he gets bounced in a round one. I don't know. Basically, I don't know what Indiana would do to keep him around, to keep him on par with these other superstars with what they're producing. But regardless, when Paul George came back from injury, he also changed his number from 24 to 13. Did he say the story where it was actually because of the nickname? I would imagine it's because of the nickname, PG-13. Do you know anything about that?
I actually did not. That's something I should have researched, honestly. I didn't really look into why he changed his number.
But that's got to be the motive.
I think it's the worst. I missed, bro. Paul George and a 24 is different.
That's what
I'm
saying.
Maybe it's just a nostalgia bias thing, or maybe it's because like he didn't play a single game after he broke his leg in the 24, and I'm just remembering those Miami-Indiana series. But Paul George and the 24 was different.
And I kind of get upset because people talk about, you know, what are the best versions of Paul George, and obviously people who, if you know, say they know the game, or you know, it's OKC, which that was his most refined version, and it's like, oh, 13 was way better than 24, but 24 was like dogging in the playoffs. So I want to go through like what actually how he played in a 24 versus a 13, obviously post and pre-injury. The stats are skewed because those first 2 years he wore 24, but he was not really playing like Paul George yet. It was till his MIP year where he really turned it on. And while the production goes up when he's healthier after the injury, in a 13 uniform, his playoff performance, you know, was great, but it was in vain due to a horrible team. The year 2016, when he was back in the playoffs, this is the first time he had been in the playoffs since Miami. He loses to the Raptors in seven. That lineup, the people who started a game in that series, all the people who started a game, George Hill, Monte Ellis, Miles Turner as a 19-year-old, Ian Mahimi, Lavoy Allen. If we're comparing that to the pre-injury lineups, obviously a significant decrease. Compared to the Raptors, that's Lowry, DeRozan, Damari Carroll, Patrick Patterson, Valanciunas. Lowry and DeRozan sucked that series, by the way. They shot like 37% combined.
That's we got to do a deep dive on DeMar, because I would love to talk about playoff woes.
Yeah.
DeMar had a great seed career, though. I'm not hating on DeMar. I'm just saying there's a lot of...
And what's crazy, though, is he's low-key protected for playoff droppers. Like, he's like, oh, it's DeMar. It's a mid-range god. Like, we'll talk about that. And then in 2017, PG has another stellar year, right? This is his 2K Gatorade flow. Like, you know, Indiana PG is going to be the next big thing. Gets traded to a super team, whatever happens. Now he has Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis, CJ Miles, Thad Young, Miles Turner, age 20. They lose to the Cavs in four against Kyrie, JR, LeBron, K-Love, Tristan Thompson. Not much to work with. He had his ups and downs in the playoffs. Obviously, he carried them as far as he could. But the biggest difference to me between 24 and 13, if we're looking at, you know, from a playoff perspective, nostalgia does carry 24 to a higher legacy, but I think that's also he showed leadership in those moments. And as a 22, 23 year old, to show that kind of leadership to bring a Pacers team to battle the Heat in seven, I think that's worth something. So even though the stats are not as great, he was more efficient as a number 13, a couple more points per game, maybe a more refined scorer. I hate to use the term dog because I feel
I
like...
Was just, I swear to God, I was just going to say, but where's
the
dog?
He's a dog. He's a dog.
But where's the dog at?
Because I'll say he's a statistical dog, right? You could yes. say that just because, oh, he's given his all. But right. I have the stats here where as a shooter, PG-24 took 25% of his shots at the rim, 15% were deep twos, and 40% were from three. That's not the percentages he shot. That's just where he's shooting on the court. So a quarter of his shots at the rim, 15% at the deep two, 40% from three. That's a very efficient style of basketball in any era. Now, PG-13 is taking 15% of his shots at the rim, 25 from the deep two, and 40 from deep three. Now, he's very efficient as a deep two scorer because he's very skilled. But if we're talking about shot profile, give me PG-24. Am I wrong?
I agree. I agree. No, I agree. And to your defense, real quick, your usage of the term dog, just so you know, there was literally an NBA scout who said that watch out for Scoot Henderson and don't only focus on Victor Wembanyama because Scoot has that dog in him. I swear to God, that was
that makes me feel better about myself.
NBA executive, like some scout, that like we're using the term dog to now address players going into the draft. Like, why should we draft this guy? Oh, he just got that dog in him. So I think it's actually, you're professionally, like, I know these episodes are a lot more professional than what we used to do. I think professionally we're allowed to use that now.
Well, I also backed it up a little bit. So I feel proud of myself.
Yeah, no, but you know what I mean, though? Like we're not, like, making jokes. So we, like, you genuinely had that dog in him. Like, this is, you guys don't understand. Like, PG-24 had that dog in him that PG-13 didn't have. This is real, right? Like,
and the last thing I'll say, there was a lot of topic of conversation since they met up in the playoffs, Carmelo versus PG. Paul George knocked out the Knicks team once en route to get to Miami. I first want to say that Knicks team, even though they were better than they were other years, they were still poorly constructed because Shumpert was very young, right? They didn't have
I'll always remember that Shump putback against
Indiana. That was tough.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, it was not a very well-constructed team. The difference to me between Melo and PG, whoever you want to say is better, I have no problem saying PG is better. I think a lot of it has to do with their shot profile. PG is very efficient as a scorer. Even when he's taking 25% from the deep two, he still gets to the rim and he puts up a lot of threes and he's efficient with his three-pointers. I think in Oklahoma, he was taking 10 a game, which to the naked eye, when you're just watching him, maybe it doesn't look like it, but he's jacking up threes like the NBA offenses do today. He's been doing that. And even in his early days, he was taking more threes than these inefficient, you know, Carmelo shots, which to Carmelo's defense was the way to run offense in the late 2000s. So that's nothing against Carmelo. Yeah, and it was effective when he was, you know, playing against Kobe because that's just what they did. But PG has a more updated shot profile, is a more efficient scorer, even though I think Carmelo's more skilled. But that's neither here nor there. I just know people like to dog Carmelo because it's like, oh, he can't do anything PG could do. He can't defend. He can't pass. He's a ball stopper. He's like, give Carmelo some respect. That's the way he was supposed to play. But PG has a nice shot profile.
Yes. Now, I'm not sure how much longer you want to linger on these Indiana days.
I was just going to ask you the question. Who would you take, 24 or 13?
I'll take 24 any day of the week. And like you said, it's because of the playoff experience.
And he's still efficient enough. He's not
And here's the thing. Like I know, obviously, like I said, the PG-13, like, bro, Miles Turner is your starting center. And this is before Miles Turner was Miles Turner. And that honestly makes me feel old knowing that Miles Turner played with Paul George in Indiana because that was a very long time ago. But I still think of Miles Turner as this young piece to go get. But I take PG-24 only because I feel like I don't want to use the term dog. So I'm going to say there was more drive and there was more like urgency. I feel like I felt like it felt like they were on a hot seat when they played in those playoff series. Like it was constant battling back and forth.
He didn't feel, you know, when someone has a superstar like aura.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know. I don't know why I use that word. But, like, you could just tell when someone, like, thinks they're a superstar and it's like, all right, now I get the ball. I'm doing this. I'm doing my thing. And a lot of times, it doesn't matter if they make it or miss. Like, there's some superstars who are incredibly effective. But PG-24 was just like, all right, I'm going to get my own and prove it. As opposed to PG-13, who was incredible, but he was already proven. It didn't feel like he was, you know.
And I feel like he knew his time in Indiana was coming to a close.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
It's more like there's no future here, right? It's like the best young piece you've gotten me is Miles Turner. I'm still sticking around with this George Hill, who's, you know, like well out of his prime now. I mean, his early years in Indiana, he was great. I don't like Lance Stephenson left the year he broke his leg, which is kind of messed up. You know, that's fake, but that's super fake.
L Lance,
like he broke it, like PG broke his leg, and Lance was like, but. I think Lance Stephenson, by the way, if he stayed in Indiana, him going to Charlotte ruined his career because he wasn't crazy in Indiana. Like, I feel like if you let him be that scoring option for Indiana that season, his career looks a lot different. But going to Charlotte, just like any other player going to Charlotte, what did you expect?
I got to say, though, he that type of player is an insane tank commander. Jordan Poole will be a generational tank commander.
Yeah, talent,
bro.
Talents.
Generational.
He'll be worth double the money. He'll be worth double the money in Washington. No, but I will take PG-24, and I think you've already said that you'll take PG-24 as well. There's clear reason to that, and I don't want to linger too much on Indiana because I know we're already essentially almost halfway through the episode. I want to definitely get to.
Well, I'll say it right here. We don't need to talk much about the Clippers at all, and I know.
Right.
Your OKC is your thing, so I'm going to let you just ramble and spit memories and whatever it's going to be, and then we could just, even if we want to circle back, we could do whatever. So,
mess
with anything.
And I do want to bring up the Clippers a little bit at the end because there's a few things to talk about, but this is this is the moment for me. My Oklahoma has is out of reach, but this is the moment for me. Now, June 30th, 2017, one of the happiest days of my life. The Indiana Pacers trade Paul George to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Victor Oladipo and Sabonis. They didn't give up a single pick to get Paul George. Now, looking back, of course, now when we look at it from whatever 6 years, it's about to be 6 years since that trade went down. Holy, 6 years ago, this trade is a win-win, right? Oladipo and Sabonis both turned into All-Stars. It ultimately led to Indiana having their new franchise player in Tyrese Haliburton. We were able to flip Paul George into Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a bunch of picks. Both teams win this scenario. Like, this trade was a win-win for both teams easily, right? At the time, this was considered a very weak return for Paul George, and Indiana took a major L. And it also gave the media perspective on how weak the trade packages were for Paul George and the little bit of the little urgency any team had on pulling the trigger for Paul because he was in the final year of his contract. People assumed that Paul George would walk and test free agency. There was a lot of talks that he wanted to go to the Lakers, right? Like, he wanted to go back home. And the Lakers weren't going to trade anything for him because they, in their mind, they're like, oh, well, Paul's going to come anyway. Why would we give up anything to get Paul George right now, right? So Indiana ship him off to Oklahoma. Oklahoma take the chance. To everyone's surprise, the following season, Paul George announces he's actually going to sign an extension with the Thunder, and he sticks around to test the PG-Russ duo again. This, in turn, led to PG having the best season of his career by far. This season does not compare to any other Paul George season. The 2018-2019 season showcased not only the best offensive season we've seen from Paul George, but also the best defensive season he's had in his career. Paul George, that season, finished third in MVP voting, and we're going to get in depth with the MVP voting in a second. And he finished third in Defensive Player of the Year voting, earning first-team All-NBA and first-team All-Defense in the same season, something that only 19 other players not named Paul George have been able to do in NBA history. So 20 guys in total, Paul George is one of those guys to accomplish both in a single season. Legendary already. Why was it that PG had this type of season his second year with the Thunder and not his first? What led to such a high jump in his numbers and his production? The disappearance of Melo in the offense, in my opinion, is the biggest factor as to why Paul George saw this jump in his career. Melo was putting up 15 shots a game with OKC, and the next season they trade him for Schroeder. Paul George sees a bigger role in the offense, going from 17 to 21 shots a game. Westbrook, on the other hand, Westbrook takes a step back. He's shooting one less shot, not a crazy step back, but he's not taking a bigger role in the offense. Paul George kind of takes the throttle of that, right? And PG is seen as more of the number one option in Oklahoma, per se. And Russ takes that step back, and Paul George now has the ball in his hands a lot more. Paul George didn't go up efficiently, he wasn't better. He didn't have any major improvements to his game. It was solely the fact that the ball was in his hands more, and he had more touches. That's it. That's all it led. That's the whole thing. He shot the same percentage from the field. The man just had four extra shots on his hand. That led to him obviously averaging 28, having an amazing season. Why didn't PG win MVP that season? Obviously, he played amazing. I mean, top three in defense, top three in offense. What happened? For the first half, he was actually a lock to win it. It was a no-brainer that Paul George was the MVP that season.
And what seed were the Thunder again?
At the time, I'm not sure. I didn't look at the seeding of the Thunder because I know that I'm about to bring it up now. The Thunder were crazy. They were like fourth in net rating before this injury. They were going on like crazy, like in a 13-game stretch, they went 11-2. They were amazing before this event that I'm about to bring up right now. Paul George, for the first half, essentially locked to win it, suffers a shoulder injury versus Denver and doesn't maintain that same elite level he had prior. With Harden and Giannis playing at the top of their games while PG kind of suffers his injury, it was obvious Paul George was going to fall in the race. Still, this season proved that Paul George was a top 10 player in the league. He emerged himself as being one of the S-tier, like, superstar. He played at a superstar level, and it was fair to call him a superstar at the time. And one of, if not the best, two-way player in the league at the time. The thing is, though, and I know that you're going to talk about the playoffs here, so I kind of give you a little bit of time to shine. The injury affected his game in the playoffs, and it led to a big disappointment in that playoff run. And it's a big reason why I feel like people don't credit Paul George for what he did on the Thunder. Because there was moments where Paul George literally stated he couldn't lift his shoulder days prior to a game, right? ultimately the Thunder lose. They have disappointing years back to back in the playoffs. People look at Paul George in, on the Thunder and chalk it up to a disappointment. But you have to remember that 2018-2019 season, healthy, Paul George was the best player on the planet. I don't care. I'll say it right now. He was the best player on the planet. He could literally, you cannot name me one part of any basketball game, of basketball, any part of his game that was flawed. He could literally do everything. He was a 6'9 forward who could dribble, create his own shot, play make when he needed to. Defensively, he was a beast. He could shoot. He could score at all three levels. He could literally do everything at 6'9". And that injury, ultimately, it affects him for many years after the Thunder, by the way. He was dealing it with the Clippers until like 2022, which sucks. But Paul George on the Thunder in 2018-2019, and I really want to stress this, was the best player on the planet. And I'll say that right now. He tapped into the potential that everybody thought he was going to tap into at the age of 22 and 23. And it really sucks that he got injured again, because it really looked like Paul George finally came back after that broken leg and proved why he was that guy back in Indiana. I know you have a lot of talk you want to do on the playoffs, so we're going to kind of talk about the playoffs and the woes there. But I really just want to add context to the fact that there were shoulder injuries. And as a shooter, as a scorer like Paul George, any basketball player even, when you have a shoulder injury, that affects your game horrendously. Like, you're going to play much worse than what you usually play like. It's obvious, right? And I'm going to keep circling around the same point, so I'd love for you to jump in. But as a Thunder fan, it's infuriating to know that we never really got to see what that Thunder team could have done.
And I'll step in as a casual at the time. This is 2019. Like, I always liked basketball. I didn't get really too in-depth until maybe the bubble year. It never felt like Paul George was the best player on the planet. And I'm sure if I knew then what I knew now, and analyzed the game like that, I'm sure I'd be able to see that. But you see James Harden in 2019 averaging 36 a game, and it's like, dang.
But the biggest difference for me is the defense.
No. I'm saying, just for the casual eye.
Oh, right.
Why I never viewed him as the best is because the media never viewed him as the best. People would praise him and say he could deserve MVP, but it was never Paul George, the best player on the planet. When you got a LeBron fresh off 2018 run, you have Steph Curry off championships. There's Kevin Durant still lurking around. You have James Harden averaging 36. So Paul George, for whatever reason, also he's in OKC. It's not a ton of media coverage. And he's playing with Russell Westbrook, someone who could be considered as even in years prior. So he was never in that mix, which is disappointing that he never really got his flowers, and he didn't get to, show him at all in the playoffs because of the injury. But he did low-key shoot himself in the foot going into the 2018 playoffs, right? I mean, he had an injury. I didn't have to speak up. After game one, he drops 36 points against the Jazz. This is a rookie, Donovan Mitchell, who was a stud his rookie year.
This is 2018,
insane.
Not his MVP year.
Yeah, we could talk about the other one too. Against the Jazz, drops 36 first game, and he's like, "Yo, I'm playoff Pete," to the media, right? They lose to the Jazz and rookie Donovan Mitchell, which is extremely disappointing. I have the stat here. He shot like 4 for 16 in that closeout game, the game six, which is, an utter disappointment for a team that brought in PG, Melo, and Russell Westbrook. I'll be the first to say Melo should never have been on that team in the first place. He doesn't fit on a modern NBA team. He does not. At that Carmelo Anthony State, where he requires shots in the mid-range, this was pre-Portland Melo, where he found his role and he shot threes and created offense when he needed to. This was a Melo who did not know what to do. And that team was just, it was lost, and Paul George did not back up his play.
I mean, to be fair, Melo that same season, gets traded to Atlanta, didn't miss a single shot for Atlanta. He did not miss one single shot for the Atlanta Hawks.
He also didn't break a sweat in that uniform.
Yeah, it was as if he never played for them. Like that. But I definitely agree with you there, where it's like that team shouldn't have worked in the first place, but there's no excuse to losing to a rookie Donovan Mitchell. That was before the Jazz were anything. That was when Gordon Hayward left. They weren't even supposed to make the playoffs. Donovan obviously breaks out, has a 20. He averaged 20 that season. He was the first rookie since
that's never
Melo
talked
at
about.
The time. He was the first rookie.
He
since
averaged 20.
Melo at the time. I think no, Luka didn't even do that. He averaged 20 and took his team to the playoffs. He's the first rookie to do that since Melo, right? I believe so. Maybe another rookie came up and did that, and I'm not thinking of it. But Donovan Mitchell at the time, that's what he accomplished. But still, you don't lose to a rookie. especially when you have prime Paul George, prime Westbrook, end of prime Melo. This was like, I'm not going to call him prime, but like it's Melo, Carmelo Anthony. He should at least be doing something, right? No excuse for it. I'm not going to excuse the 2018 playoff run. I think that was just a mishap in terms of like that team not knowing how they should function. I feel like that team was destined to fail. I mean, people consider it a super team. I don't, to be honest. I don't look at that as a super team. You could argue with a wall. That's just my opinion because I watched that Thunder team the whole season. But I'd really love to talk about the 2019 and that Portland series especially, because this is a season where I think we got to cut Paul George and the Oklahoma City Thunder some slack here.
Yes, I mean, if you want to preface it, by the stats, they lost 4-1 in five yes. games. Lillard yeah. dropped a 50-point closeout. At this point, Melo is not on the roster, right? He's not on the roster.
Dennis Schroeder's there.
And you have Paul George, who I looked at his shot profile changing from one year to the next. It became more efficient. The long twos that he took in Indiana were slowly decreasing year by year to the point where now he's have this modern style of basketball where now he's attacking yep. the rim more and he's shooting more threes, which he's very capable of scoring anywhere. So when your game is more efficient, right, that just leads to better offense, which is why he averaged more points, more touches, like all this stuff on top of the crazy defense. And as someone who struggles with shoulder injuries, I mean, I played more baseball. I could not throw a baseball. So I can understand, like, when my shoulder heats up and I got to shoot a basketball, like I could take like 10 shots and that sucker's burning.
Yeah.
I don't know what he had. Like mine's in like the back over here.
It was in his left shoulder and it was I think it had something to do with the rotator cuff and one other thing that he tore. It was his shoulder. It was his left shoulder. That's all I know.
Thank you for the insight, Dr. Sani.
Yes. But I will say this, Paul George, again, he states that he couldn't even lift his shoulders days prior to games, right? Like, there would be days where, like, the first day he could shoot a ball, like, it would, like, the day of the game would be the first day he shot a ball in a while. Like, that's, what did you, like, and again, it sucks as a Thunder fan because I feel like Paul George would have dominated that playoff. I feel like him and Westbrook, they have Jeremy Grant in the lineup now, Dennis Schroeder, they have good depth. I think they understand how to play together as a team. They were, like, fourth in net rating when they were all healthy that season. Like, the Thunder were good. They were a really good team. We were supposed to do something, and we lose on a 55-whatever-million-foot game winner, Damian Lillard, and it's just... And the whole team crumbles, right? But I don't know.
That was a bad shot.
That was a bad shot. And I love how he admits it was a good shot, like, a few years later. But... I mean, this could kind of segue into the Clippers and a playoff resurgence per se.
The last thing I want to say is because, I mean, we could pin this on the shoulder injury, which we could definitely do. I'm willing to do that. But
I'm just trying to avoid, like...
I know you've been trying to avoid it. Russell Westbrook shot 36% that series. Dog
Yo,
was healthy.
This ain't a deep dive
healthy.
On Russ, bro. This ain't a deep dive on Russ, bro.
I see you trying to duck it now. I see exactly what you're doing. Oh, wait, Paul George doesn't deserve any blame. They just, you know, they're the better team. He was hurt. Nah, bro.
Yo,
Russ could have pulled some weight.
Oh, stop. Stop, bro.
That's crazy.
This is not a deep dive on Russell Westbrook.
You don't want to do a deep dive on
this
Russ.
Is not, hell no, I don't want to do no deep dive on Russell Westbrook. I'm playing. If we do a deep dive on Russ, you'll see he was that guy in the early years, bro. Triple-double king, MVP, top 5 point guard of all time. We can get into that. But
he was a little disappointing
that year. I'll admit it.
All right. Talk about the Clippers now. I'll let you go.
We could talk about the Clippers though. Thank you. Paul George and Kawhi team up in LA after two failed seasons in Oklahoma, getting two first round exits. In his time there, Paul George now has the stigma around him that he is a playoff choker, and he gets his chance with the Clippers to prove once again that he can turn up come playoff time just like he did in Indiana. The whole season, the first season, 2019-2020 season, the narrative, and I believe this is when you got into basketball, so I'm sure you remember this, the narrative was the West was a battle of LA. It was speculated that it would be the Clippers and the Lakers fighting it out for a spot in the finals. We were going to see them in the playoffs no matter what. There was nobody that could stop them but each other. And ultimately, this wasn't the case. Clippers fall through in the bubble, blow a 3-1 lead. We're going to talk about that. So let's take a more in-depth look at the bubble. Paul George and his 13 games played in the playoffs that season in the bubble scored under 20 points 7 times and only shot over 50% twice. In fact, he only shot over 45% 4 times. 7 times he shot 40% or less, and 4 times he shot 25% or less from the field. Was a terrible, and in my opinion, the worst playoff run that guy's had in his career. Let's take a look, because the other years, I'm chalking it up to injury. I don't care. This was healthy Paul George, but apparently he was still dealing with shoulder injuries, by the way. I'm not going to say apparently. That's what he said. But the fact that he played 13 games and played that bad throughout those 13 games, I'm chalking it up as like he was just consistently bad that playoff run. This was the season that Paul George was dubbed Pandemic P, as he had a disappointing playoff run with the Clippers during the pandemic, blowing a 3-1 lead to the Nuggets. 3 straight seasons of disappointments with 2 teams, one of them having at the time the best player in the world with Kawhi Leonard. That was, right, we could agree that Kawhi from 2019
Bro,
to 22.
I'll push nasty narratives. I still think he might be the best player in the world. I don't care if he's hurt, bro. What we saw.
Healthy, that's a conversation.
Denver would have their hands full. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I agree. And that Suns team doesn't beat the Clippers with Kawhi.
Heck no.
They don't. But Kawhi, that year, only played 2 bad games at playoff run, too. Like, this was the Clippers strictly fell through on bad Paul George performances because Kawhi played 2 bad games in Game 2 and Game 7 versus Denver. The rest, he played like Kawhi Leonard. Like, this wasn't like a flop artist of the duo. It was a flop artist of Paul George. Kawhi fell through in the closing game in Game 7, but they shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place, right? This is where Paul George proves he's capable of playoff basketball the following season. When you're that low, all you can do is go up, right? Like, playing that bad, the expectation of you, it's very low at this point. 3 straight seasons.
Oh, no, bro. Ben Simmons found a way to go lower.
Yeah. I mean, like, when it comes to playoffs, like, 3 straight seasons of disappointments. We're not looking at Paul George as this like guy he was in Indiana, right? Like, there's that narrative isn't there anymore.
Oh, he's no longer a superstar at this point.
Yes. In the 19 games Paul George played in the playoffs, the following season, though, he never dropped below 20 points in a single game. In Game 4 of the West semifinals versus the Jazz, unfortunately, Kawhi partially tears his ACL, which in my opinion, I think is the start to the downfall of Kawhi's career. I don't know if he's ever going to come back and be fully healthy ever again, because he just keeps getting injured in that same spot. But he's ruled out for the rest of that playoff run for the Clippers. This is 2021 again, just to add context. And now it's the Jazz's series to win, right? Like, they know Kawhi, it's tied 2-2. The Clippers should be done for. Psych. Paul George comes out with 2 amazing performances in games 5 and 6, putting up 37 and 28, and they close out the series 4-2, move on to the conference finals to play the Suns. To everybody's surprise, the Clippers still move on. Although they lose the series versus the Suns, it was shown that with Kawhi and the way that PG was playing, it could have easily been the Clippers' season to win it all. If Kawhi is healthy and PG's playing at that level, the Clippers should have won the ring that season. Ultimately, Kawhi falls, but Paul George proved that he can perform in the playoffs. And I, you know, hats off to him for kind of coming back in that 2021 season and putting up respectable numbers. You know, the fact that they were able to take the Suns team to 6 games, and that was the Suns at like their peak. I believe they won 60 games that season, like 61 and 21. I don't have their specific record on hand, but Paul George was inconsistently efficient-wise throughout that series. But again, he proved he could show up when it matters. He had like a 40-point game when they were down 3-1 to kind of keep the series alive. And he showed that in the right situation, he could still contribute to winning basketball. Again, this 2023 season, I still think that the Clippers should have won it all fully healthy. And the narrative around Paul George now seems to be not only is he always injured, but it seems like his co-stars are always injured as well now. And unfortunately, that seems to be the way it goes for most NBA stars, which is why I love doing these deep dives. So we can kind of show love to the players that don't get that love. Because for those casuals out there, it's the Steph Curry and LeBron James show for the 2010s. And then now it's all about Giannis. Like, there's a lot of low-key players that, in the right situation, they're in that same spot, right?
There's an alternate universe where, like, 8 teams win a ring in the 2010s. Yeah.
Yes, very true. But the reason I bring up that 2021 playoff run is just to show that, you know, I know Paul George had 3 runs, 3 years, straight seasons. if you want to include Indiana, actually, there's like four or five straight seasons of playoff woes, right? But 2021, I think he really came back and showed that when it comes to playoff time, he could still perform. I think 2022, they didn't even play, right? Like, injuries for the Clippers just suck. And it's annoying. But, I mean, hats off, Paul George. That's the end of what I have. I don't know if you want to end off. I know I feel like you have some things to say. But in conclusion, I just want to say, Paul George, in my opinion, heavily underappreciated. One of the best talents we've seen in our generation. In terms of talent as a player, he's top 10 this generation. And he was really supposed to be that guy. He was supposed to be the face of the NBA. We perceived him as the guy next to LeBron James. Like you said, there were some people saying that he could have been better than Kevin Durant. So,
yeah, I feel bad because you're being so wholesome. I thought you let him off the hook a little bit in that Game 7 versus Denver. In, what is it, 2020?
No, I know. He played terrible.
Bro, in Game 7, 4 for 16, 10 points, 5 turnovers.
And how much did Denver win by? It wasn't a it was a close game, wasn't it?
I don't think it was a blowout. And Kawhi only had 14 points himself.
Like, it was a winnable game.
Like Lou Will was dicing him up.
Yeah. Lou Will was getting lemon pepper wings and then coming back. I mean, shout out to Lou Will, by the way. He just officially retired. But Lou Will, you know, left the bubble to an undisclosed location. Got some lemon pepper wings, came back, and he just barbecue chicken.
Off topic, I had lemon pepper wings for the first time from like just a Wingstop. I never had the lemon pepper flavor. It's good. Very good.
Amazing. It's amazing. I have lemon pepper seasoning in my cabinet. Put it on everything.
Really?
That's a lie. I don't put it on everything. I put it on a lot of things. Everything that's chicken. Everything chicken, I put it on.
I might have to try
that. You ever have lemon pepper chicken nuggets?
What? I guess the last thing I have to say is at this point in his career, I still consider Paul George a star. He still plays like a star when he's healthy, which is rare. But it's definitely interesting. I know he's come out and said before, like, he kind of understands his role as maybe a 1B or a 2 to Kawhi, which is unfortunate because in 2019, he was a 1 on a championship team. I think there was a time in even 2017 because the 2018 year when you're trying to reacclimate yourself to a...
With Carmelo Anthony and Westbrook after an MVP season, it's a mess.
And those two guys specifically are very tough to mesh with.
Yes.
Because they're not used to meshing with others. So like trying to put them, that was a mess. And that's a prime year of his career where he was healthy for the most part.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes to waste. And then you got the crappy years with the crappy teams and the PG-13 years.
He had a lot of wasteful seasons in terms of like
he had
what
a lot
the GM
of wasted seasons. And when you have only a couple times to win a championship, like it's not easy to do that.
It's
like
very,
2019
and
was a chance. He got hurt, and then the chance with Kawhi when Kawhi went down.
And this season especially.
Yes,
this season the West was up for grabs.
Dog.
The West was really up for grabs, bro. And big ups to Denver. Not hating on Denver, but a healthy West, bro. It's infuriating. The fact that Denver team took 6 games to beat the Suns, and the Suns took 6 games to beat the Clippers without Paul George or Kawhi, what would the Clippers have done?
It's crazy. I'm just looking at someone like Donovan Mitchell because I recall his early career very well when he just came in the league cooking right away, because I remember following the 2017 Jazz real closely when they were taking down the Lob City Clippers.
Yeah.
I was like a freshman sophomore in high school.
Gordon Hayward, Joe Johnson. Here.
Yeah, yeah. Dante Exum. They had all the dogs. But I'm seeing his career now. He's 26, and he's been mainly healthy, but he hasn't, you know, come close to a ring. He's had the fails with Rudy Gobert. He had the whole COVID thing with him, the mixing chemistry where it wasn't giving him the ball or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And this year was I don't want to say a wasted year because they have a very young team. But like, let's say something happens with Garland, or something happens with Allen.
God forbid.
God forbid. Then you're looking at someone in the middle of his prime who like is at the peak of his abilities, who you could say is like a number two on a championship team for maybe 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah,
is like just not getting the opportunity. And like when you have that opportunity, the people who seize it are the one. And a lot of times it's not based on what you do; it's based on what others do. Right? It's a team sport.
Yeah, and
those
it's situational.
Are the ones that go down in history.
It's a situational thing.
It's so sad for like all these guys that don't aren't able, based on stuff they can't control, to capitalize right. on the opportunity. When Paul George was 22-23, when he had the world in his hands, he took advantage. He took the Heat to seven yeah. games.
And bro,
he took the victory to seven games.
A broken leg, like, for to represent your country, like, that's just an unfortunate situation. It's not like, this isn't the case of, no, I'm not going to pin this on him, and I'm not going to say that his career is going downhill. Obviously, I still believe that there's a chance of resurgence and understanding, but it's not the case of, like, again, I'm not hating on this. I'm just using this as an example. I really want to stress that. John Morant, who's like stirring up in the media and kind of like acting out and being a goofball, I guess, like goofing around. And like, you know, I'm not going to call out his what he's done. I'm not hating on him, but I'm just saying Paul George didn't fall off due to like his own actions. Like, it was just an unfortunate sequence of injuries. And then the Pacers just gave up on building a team when he got injured. Like, who the hell did the Pacers have when Paul George came back? You're right. Like, that, that's something, to be honest, I never looked at. I just looked at Paul George falling in the first round.
Incompetent teams.
You're right. Now that you think about it, and this is why I love doing these deep dives, and that I could have you to contrast the same points they're the same chapters, because there's going to be things that we miss, of course. And that's something I missed. The Pacers team freaking sucked. The Pacers sucked when Paul George came back. They were a terrible team. They should not have been in the playoffs. They should have been competing for, at the time, Ben Simmons. And who was in 2017? Who was number one in 2017? Markelle Fultz, which is so funny to say, both of them now. But, like, they... Paul George, heavily underappreciated. One of my favorite players of all time. Again, I mean, I don't want to spin around. I mean, I know we're at the end of the episode here. But I really do hope you guys appreciated this deep dive. I really do hope you guys want to see more of this, because these have been really fun to record. And it's definitely given me a new level of respect and insight on different players. I know we did Chris Paul previously. We're not going to say who we're going to do next. We'll leave it to a surprise. But the reason we've been kind of doing episodes weekly is because this takes us a lot of time to prep, of course. I mean, who else is going to bring up a article from, what's their name again? Let me Poch de la Rosa from November 2013. Nobody's doing that. So you're welcome. Hoop, I don't know if you want
to... Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say, I mean, I've been trying to take away things to kind of put in my the way I view players now. Like, I try to get a perspective based on each player we're doing.
Right.
With Chris Paul, it was more of the, let's not judge who gets the MVP, let's judge who's deserving, or someone who's in the running. Like, I can view Chris Paul as an MVP in my mind because of what I saw. Even though I wasn't, you know, really, I was like 4 or 5 years old, I look back on it, it's like, oh, I can, when I think of Chris Paul, I want to imagine him with an MVP trophy next to him, because that's what I believe he deserved. So even though people might not have the hardware or the scoring title or whatever, you got to look at a player based off, if you're going to judge other people who have MVPs, for example, you got to do that for the same for people who were deserving of one.
Agreed.
And then with PG, it's going to the, I now understand why players want out of a certain situation when it's not working, because we just said how in Indiana, we didn't know he was going to break down OKC. Those 2 years where he was healthy, he had bad rosters. So if you're looking for a ring as a first option.
In a small market too.
In a small market, it's like, yeah, I want to get out of here. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be healthy. I might only have 2 more years of this. Why would I want to rot around here? So like, you look at guys like Damian Lillard, obviously, you know.
Extreme case of loyalty, by the
extreme, way. Extreme case, but like, people begging him to get out. Like, I understand that. I also, you know, I try to understand both sides to it. And what players want, what you want for players, regardless. Like, you know what
I'm
talking about.
Especially after doing these episodes too, I've also gained like a new, not respect per se of like jumping ship of certain players, but no more like, oh, he don't want to stay for the grind. He don't want to, bro,
that's what I was alluding to.
And the best example to bring this up is this idea of being loyal to a team. Marcus Smart just got traded. Like, they were so quick to get rid of that boy. There was no rumors. There was no reports. And not to say that Marcus Smart is like a franchise player, but I thought he was going to be in Boston until at least like...
Bro, they made that deal in like 3 hours because the first one fell through.
Brogdon
and it's like, oh, let's scrap up another
one.
Marcus, get
Smart out of here. Like, you could have given up, like, Rob Will, like, all these other guys who were, like, you know, crucial to the team. But, like, bro, Marcus Smart? Like, that is I really cannot wait to see how that Celtics team functions without a vet. Because I feel like Marcus Smart, because do you remember when Celtics had woes and Marcus Smart literally publicly called them out and goes, Jason and Jalen think this is an ISO team. It's not an ISO team. And they start playing good again. I feel like that voice in the locker room is something that a young team needs. and getting rid of Smart, who was clutch in many situations, by the way. He was crucial in a lot of those Celtics situations. And I'm not, I know he's a little slightly overrated. You know, his defense player of the year, you know, you could say that he's not like a true DPOY or whatever. Whatever you want to say, I've seen a lot of narratives. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what I've seen. The fact of the matter is, Celtics trading Smart for Porzingis was a fake move. That was fake AF, it's, Brad Stevens.
And I want to say, like, first off, Al Horford is probably still in the locker room. I know they're bringing in some older guys to surround Mazzulla with.
But Smart's
Yeah,
heart.
I understand. And I...
The heart.
I want to say it's, you know, it's fake. It's just disgusting. I mean, it's a business. And on the business. Roster, Porzingis is the front court depth they needed.
Yes.
I already didn't like Boston. I don't like them even more now because I can appreciate someone who's the heart and soul of a team. And
yeah.
They already traded IT. That is a fake front office. That is
a fake front office.
I don't care.
Like, I understand it's
better,
probably better
like,
for them in the long
nasty.
Run. It's not working. I get that. But you guys are fake. Like, bro, they caught him off guard. Like, Marcus Smart's still trying to process it. I don't know if you saw that report. He still doesn't know.
That.
Like, he doesn't believe
that
it happened. Like, you guys are fake, bro. Brad Stevens, you are not invited to any of my birthday parties.
He's taking it very personally.
But big ups. I know it's a Paul George episode. We're going to end the episode now. But big ups to the Grizzlies. They needed that vet leadership in Marcus Smart. I really think Marcus Smart is going to get those guys in line, which is super dope to see. Watch out for the Grizzlies. That was a great pickup by them. Thank you for listening to this episode, episode 82. We did a deep dive on Paul George. We hope that one day Paul George hops on the show. Paul George, if you're listening to this, come on the show. We would love to talk to you. But yeah, man. Shout out Podcast P. Great podcast. Funny enough, they're run by Wave TV, who I used to be employed by. Same people that run Out of Pocket. Zach, we've had him on the show multiple times. So we do have some connections to Wave TV. Great people over there. Go listen to their podcast. They really know how to run a pod. And yeah, we thank you again for listening, and we'll see you for episode 83. Peace.